Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to Buddhism on Air. In the last few weeks, we've been looking at the advantages of bodhicitta as part of our introduction to the attitude training text, Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun, by the ancient Tibetan master Namgyal Pal. Before we go on to how to develop bodhicitta, I'd like to recall Pema Chodron's wonderful teaching on the bodhicitta in her book, The Places That Scare You. It will help us to understand what bodhicitta is and how to develop it, even in the worst of times. This is what she writes. When I was about 6 years old, I received the essential bodhicitta teaching from an old woman sitting in the sun. I was walking by her house one day, feeling lonely, unloved, and mad, kicking anything I could find. Laughing, she said to me, "Little girl, don't you go letting life harden your heart." Right there, I received this pith instruction. We can let the circumstances of our lives harden us so that we become increasingly resentful and afraid, or we can let them soften us and make us kinder and more open to what scares us. We always have this choice. If we were to ask the Buddha, what is bodhicitta? He might tell us that this word is easier to understand than to translate. He might encourage us to seek out ways to find its meaning in our own lives. He might tantalize us by adding that it is only bodhicitta that heals, that bodhicitta is capable of transforming the hardest of hearts and the most prejudiced and fearful minds. Citta means mind, and also heart or attitude. Bodhi means awake, enlightened, or completely open. Sometimes the completely open heart and mind of bodhicitta is called the soft spot, a place as vulnerable and as tender as an open wound. It is equated in part with our ability to love. Even the cruelest people have this soft spot. Even the most vicious animals love their offspring. As Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche put it, everybody loves something, even if it's only tortillas. Bodhicitta is also equated in part with compassion, our ability to feel the pain that we share with others. Without realizing it, we continually shield ourselves from this pain because it scares us. We put up protective walls made of opinions, prejudices, and strategies, barriers that are built on a deep fear of being hurt. These walls are further fortified by emotions of all kinds: anger, craving, indifference, jealousy and envy, arrogance and pride. But fortunately for us, the soft spot, our innate ability to love and to care about things, is like a crack in these walls we erect. It's a natural opening in the barriers we create when we're afraid. With practice, we can learn to find this opening. We can learn to seize that vulnerable moment, love, gratitude, loneliness, embarrassment, inadequacy, to awaken bodhicitta. An analogy for bodhicitta is the rawness of a broken heart. Sometimes this broken heart gives birth to anxiety and panic, sometimes to anger, resentment, and blame. But under the hardness of that armor, there is the tenderness of genuine sadness. This is our link with all those who have ever loved. This genuine heart of sadness can teach us great compassion. It can humble us when we're arrogant and soften us when we're unkind. It awakens us when we prefer to sleep and pierces through our indifference. This continual ache of the heart is a blessing that, when accepted fully, can be shared with all. The Buddha said that we are never separated from enlightenment. Even at the times we feel most stuck, we are never alienated from the awakened state. This is a revolutionary assertion. Even ordinary people like us, with hang-ups and confusion, have this mind of enlightenment called bodhicitta. The openness and warmth of bodhicitta is in fact our true nature and condition. Even when our neuroses feel far more basic than our wisdom, even when we're feeling most confused and hopeless, bodhicitta, like the open sky, is always here, undiminished by the clouds that temporarily cover it. Given that we are so familiar with the clouds, of course, we might find the Buddha's teachings hard to believe. Yet the truth is that in the midst of our suffering in the hardest of times, we can contact this noble heart of bodhicitta. It is always available in pain as well as in joy. A young woman wrote to me about finding herself in a small town in the Middle East, surrounded by people jeering, yelling, and threatening to throw stones at her and her friends because they were Americans. Of course, she was terrified, and what happened to her is interesting. Suddenly, she identified with every person throughout history who had ever been scorned and hated. She understood what it was like to be despised for any reason: ethnic group, racial background, sexual preference, gender. Something cracked wide open, and she stood in the shoes of millions of oppressed people and saw with a new perspective. She even understood her shared humanity with those who hated her. The sense of deep connection, of belonging to the same family, is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta exists on two levels. First, there is unconditional bodhicitta, an immediate experience that is refreshingly free of concept, opinion, and our usual all-caught-upness. It's something hugely good that we are not able to pin down ever, even slightly, like knowing it at gut level that there's absolutely nothing to lose. Second, there's relative bodhicitta, our ability to keep our hearts and minds open to suffering without shutting down. Those who train wholeheartedly in awakening unconditional and relative bodhicitta are called bodhisattvas, or warriors. Not warriors who kill and harm, but warriors of non-aggression, who hear the cries of the world. These are men and women who are willing to train in the middle of the fire. Training in the middle of the fire can mean that warrior bodhisattvas enter challenging situations in order to alleviate suffering. It also refers to their willingness to cut through personal reactivity and self-deception, to their dedication to uncovering the basic, undistorted energy of bodhicitta. We have many examples of master warriors, people like Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King, who recognized that the greatest harm comes from our own aggressive minds. They devoted their lives to helping others understand this truth. There are also many ordinary people who spend their lives training in opening their hearts and minds in order to help others do the same. Like them, we could learn to relate to ourselves and our world as warriors. We could train in awakening our courage and love. There are both formal and informal methods for helping us to cultivate this bravery and kindness. There are practices for nurturing our capacity to rejoice, to let go, to love, and to shed a tear. There are those that teach us to stay open to uncertainty. There are others that help us to stay present at the times that we habitually shut down. Wherever we are, we can train as a warrior. The practices of meditation, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity are our tools. With the help of these practices, we can uncover the soft spot of bodhicitta. We will find that tenderness in sorrow and in gratitude. We will find it behind the hardness of rage and in the shakiness of fear. It is available in loneliness as well as in kindness. Many of us prefer practices that will not cause discomfort, and at the same time, we want to be healed. But bodhicitta training doesn't work like that. A warrior accepts that we can never know what will happen to us next. We can try to control the uncontrollable by looking for security and predictability, always hoping to be comfortable and safe. But the truth is that we can never avoid uncertainty. This not knowing is part of the adventure, and it's also what makes us afraid. Bodhicitta training offers no promise of happy endings. Rather, this I who wants to find security, who wants something to hold on to, can finally learn to grow up. The central question of a warrior's training is not how we avoid uncertainty and fear, but how we relate to discomfort. How do we practice with difficulty, with our emotions, with the unpredictable encounters of an ordinary day? All too frequently, we relate like timid birds who don't dare to leave the nest. Here we sit in a nest that's smelly, that hasn't served its function for a very long time. No one is arriving to feed us. No one is protecting us and keeping us warm. And yet, we keep hoping Mother Bird will arrive. We could do ourselves the ultimate favor and finally get out of that nest. That this takes courage is obvious. That we could use some helpful hints is also clear. We may doubt that we're up to being a warrior in training. But we can ask ourselves this question. Do I prefer to grow up and relate to life directly, or do I choose to live and die in fear? All beings have the capacity to feel tenderness, to experience heartbreak, pain, and uncertainty. Therefore, the enlightened heart of bodhicitta is available to us all. The insight meditation teacher Jack Kornfield tells of witnessing this in Cambodia during the time of the Khmer Rouge. 50,000 people had become communists at gunpoint, threatened with death if they continued their Buddhist practices. In spite of the danger, a temple was established in the refugees camp, and 20,000 people attended the opening ceremony. There were no lectures or prayers, but simply continuous chanting of one of the central teachings of the Buddha. Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is an ancient and eternal law. Thousands of people chanted and wept, knowing that the truth in these words was even greater than their suffering. Bodhicitta has this kind of power. It will inspire and support us in good times and bad. It is like discovering a wisdom and courage we do not even know we have. Just as alchemy changes any metal into gold, bodhicitta can, if we let it, transform any activity, word or thought, into a vehicle for awakening our compassion. Now, up to this point, Pema Chodron has been talking about relative bodhicitta, what we understand as the mind that has such love and compassion for beings that it wishes to do everything it can to benefit those beings right up until enlightenment. It is based on great love and great compassion. She now goes on to talk about ultimate bodhicitta, the understanding of how things, including ourselves, exist. She's talking, of course, about the Heart Sutra. This gets interesting because we cannot actually grasp ultimate bodhicitta with our conceptual mind. Her talk becomes quite Zen in character. But first, the Heart Sutra, which goes like this. Thus have I heard, once the Blessed One's dwelling in Rajgriha at Vulture Peak Mountain, together with a great gathering of the Sangha of monks and a great gathering of the Sangha of Bodhisattvas. At that time, the Blessed One entered the Samadhi that expresses the Dharma called profound illumination. And at the same time, Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, while practicing the profound Prajnaparamita, saw in this way. He saw the five skandhas to be empty of nature. Then, through the power of the Buddha, Venerable Shariputra said to the Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, how should a son or daughter of noble family train who wishes to practice the profound Prajnaparamita? Addressed in this way, Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, said to the Venerable Shariputra, O Shariputra, a son or daughter of noble family who wishes to practice the profound Prajnaparamita should see in this way, seeing the five skandhas to be empty of nature. Form is emptiness, emptiness also is form. Emptiness is no other than form, form is no other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, perception, formation and consciousness are emptiness. Thus, Shariputra, all dharmas are emptiness. There are no characteristics. There's no birth and no cessation. There's no impurity and no purity. There's no decrease and no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there's no form, no feeling, no perception, no formation, no consciousness. No eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. No appearance, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no dharmas. No eye dhatu up to no mind dhatu. No dhatus of dharmas, no mind consciousness dhatu, no ignorance, no end of ignorance, up to no old age and death, no end of old age and death, no suffering, no origin of suffering, no cessation of suffering, no path, no wisdom, no attainment, and no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, since the Bodhisattvas have no attainment, they abide by means of Prajnaparamita. Since there is no obscuration of mind, there is no fear. They transcend falsity and attain complete nirvana. All the Buddhas were three times, by means of Prajnaparamita, fully awakened to unsurpassable true complete enlightenment. Therefore, the great mantra of Prajnaparamita, the mantra of great insight, the unsurpassed mantra, the unequaled mantra, the mantra that calms all suffering, should be known as truth, since there is no deception. The Prajnaparamita mantra is said in this way, Om Gati Gati Parigati Parasamgati Bodhisattva. Thus, Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva should train in the profound Prajnaparamita. Then the Blessed One arose from that samadhi and praised Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, saying, Good, good, O son of noble family. Thus it is, O son of noble family, thus it is. One should practice the profound Prajnaparamita just as you have taught, and all the Tathagatas will rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, Venerable Shariputra and Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, that whole assembly and the world with its gods, humans, asuras and gandhavas rejoiced and praised the words of the Blessed One. Now Pema Chodron's commentary goes like this. At one time, the Buddha gathered his students together at a spot called Vajrapeak Mountain. Here he presented some revolutionary teachings. Teachings on the wide open, groundless dimension of our being, known traditionally as shunyata, as unconditional bodhicitta, as prajnaparamita. The Buddha had already been teaching on groundlessness for some time. Many of the students there on Vajrapeak Mountain had a profound realization of impermanence and egolessness, the truth that nothing, including ourselves, is solid or predictable. They understood the suffering that results from grasping and fixation. They had learned this from Buddha himself. They had experienced its profundity in meditation. But the Buddha knew that our tendency to seek solid ground is deeply rooted. Ego can use anything to maintain the illusion of security, including the belief in insubstantiality and change. So the Buddha did something shocking. With the Prajnaparamita perfection of unconditional wisdom teachings, he pulled the rug out completely, taking his students further into groundlessness. He told the audience that whatever they believed had to be let go, that dwelling upon any description of reality was a trap. This was not comfortable news for the audience to hear. Pema Chodron is reminded here of Krishnamurti, who is believed to be enlightened by the Theosophists. They believed his teachings would be revolutionary, and they were. When he grew up, he disbanded the Order of the Star, the organization formed for him, because it gave too much ground for his followers. Pema Chodron says, The Vajrapeak experience was something like that for the Buddhist students. It wiped away all their existing conceptions about the nature of reality. The Buddha's principal message that day was that holding on to anything blocks wisdom. Any conclusions we might draw must be let go. The only way to fully understand the bodhicitta teachings, the only way to practice them fully, is to abide in the unconditional openness of the Prajnaparamita, patiently cutting through all our tendencies to hang on. In the Heart Sutra, the Buddha stays in a state of deep meditation and lets the Bodhisattva of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, do the talking. What he says doesn't come through intellect, but through the understanding gained in his practice. Pema Chodron says it's important that Shariputra question the Bodhisattva. She says, even though a great Bodhisattva was teaching and the Buddha was clearly in charge, the profound meaning emerged only through questioning. Nothing was taken complacently or on blind faith. Shariputra is a role model for us as students. He wasn't willing just to accept what he heard. He wanted to know for himself what was true. So he asked Avalokiteshvara, In all the words and actions and thoughts of my life, how do I apply the Prajnaparamita? What is the key to training in this practice? What view do I take? Avalokiteshvara answered with the most famous of all Buddha's paradoxes. Form is emptiness, emptiness also is form. Emptiness is no other than form, form is no other than emptiness. When I first heard this, I had no idea whatsoever what he was talking about. My mind went completely blank. His explanation, like the Prajnaparamita itself, is inexpressible, indescribable, inconceivable. Form is that which simply is before we project our beliefs onto it. The Prajnaparamita represents a completely fresh take, an unfettered mind where anything is possible. Prajna is the unfiltered expression of the open ear, open eye, open mind that is found in every living being. Thich Nhat Hanh translates the word as understanding. It's a fluid process, not something definite and concrete that can be summed up or measured. This Prajnaparamita, this inexpressibility, is our human experience. It's not particularly regarded as a peaceful state of mind or as a disturbed one. It is a state of basic intelligence that is open, questioning, and unbiased. Whether it comes in the form of curiosity, bewilderment, shock, or relaxation isn't really the issue. We train when we're caught off guard and when our life is up in the air. We train, as Trungpa Rinpoche said, in not afraid to be a fool. We cultivate a simple, direct relationship with our being. No philosophizing, no moralizing, no judgments. Whatever arises in our mind is workable. So when Avalokiteshvara says form is emptiness, he's referring to the simple, direct relationship with the immediacy of experience, direct contact with blood and sweat and flowers, with love as well as hate. First, we wipe away our preconceptions, and then we even have to let go even of our belief that we should look at things without preconceptions. We keep pulling out our own rug. When we perceive form as empty, without any barriers or veils, we understand the perfection of things just as they are. One could become addicted to this experience. It could give us a sense of freedom from the dubiousness of our emotions and the illusion that we could dangle above the messiness of our lives. But emptiness also is form, turns the tables. Emptiness continually manifests as war and peace, as grief, as birth, old age, sickness and death, as well as joy. We are challenged to stay in touch with the heart-throbbing quality of being alive. That's why we train in the relative bodhicitta practices of the Four Limitless Ones and Tonglen. They help us to fully engage in the vividness of life with an open, unclouded mind. Things are as bad and as good as they seem. There's no need to add anything extra. Imagine a dialogue with the Buddha. He asks, "How do you perceive reality?" And we answer honestly and say, "I perceive it as separate from me and solid." He says, "No, look deeper." So we go away and meditate and sincerely contemplate this question. We return to the Buddha and say, "I know the answer now. The answer is that everything is not solid. Everything is empty." And he says, "No, look deeper." We say, "Well, that's impossible. It's either one way or the other, empty or not empty, right?" And he says, "No." If this were our boss, perhaps we wouldn't care, but this is the Buddha. So we think, maybe I have to hang in there a bit and go further with the irritation I'm feeling at not being given any satisfaction. So we meditate and contemplate this question. We discuss it with our friends. Next time we see the Buddha, we say, "I think I can answer your question. Everything is both empty and not empty simultaneously." And he says, "No." Believe me, we're feeling very groundless, and that means rattled. It's uncomfortable not to be able to get ground under our feet. But the process here is of unmasking. Even though we're irritated and anxious, we're moving closer to seeing the true unfixed nature of mind. Since no is all we can get out of the Buddha, we go home and spend the next year trying to answer this riddle. It's like a Zen koan. Eventually we return and say, "Okay, there's only one other possible answer. The nature of reality is that it neither exists nor doesn't exist. It is neither form nor emptiness." And we feel good. It's a beautiful, groundless answer. But the Buddha says, "No, that's too limited an understanding." Maybe at this point, his no is such a shock that we experience the wide-open mind of Prajnaparamita, the mind that is satisfied with no resting place at all. After Avalokiteshvara told Shariputra that form is emptiness, emptiness also is form, he went even further, pointing out there is nothing, not even the Buddha's teaching, to hold on to. No three marks of existence, no suffering, no end of suffering, no imprisonment, no liberation. The story goes that many of the students were so dumbfounded by these teachings that they had heart attacks. A Tibetan teacher suggested that more likely they just got up and walked out of the talk. Like the theosophists with Krishnamurti, they didn't want to hear this. Just like us. We don't like to have our basic assumptions challenged. It's too threatening. Now, if this teaching had only come from Avalokiteshvara, the students might have been able to rationalize their fears. Oh, this is just a warrior on the path, not so different from us. He's very wise and compassionate, of course, but he's been known to get things wrong. But the Buddha was sitting right there in deep meditation, clearly pleased with this presentation of how to abide in Prajnaparamita. There was no way out of this dilemma. Then, inspired by Shariputra's questioning, Avalokiteshvara continued. He taught that when we understand that there's no final attainment, no ultimate answer or stopping place, when our mind is free of warring emotions and the belief in separateness, then we have no fear. When I heard this many years ago, before I had any interest at all in the spiritual path, a little light bulb went off. I definitely wanted to know more about no fear. This instruction on Prajnaparamita is a teaching on fearlessness. To the extent that we stop struggling against uncertainty and ambiguity, to that extent we dissolve our fear. The synonym for total fearlessness is full enlightenment, wholehearted, open-minded interaction with our world. Meanwhile, we train in patiently moving in that direction. By learning to relax with groundlessness, we gradually connect with a mind that knows no fear. Then Avalokiteshvara proclaimed the pith of the Prajnaparamita, the essence of the rug-pulling-out experience, the essence of the fearless, open state of mind. It came in the form of a mantra, Om Gati Gati Paragati Parasamgati Bodhisvara. Just as a seed contains the tree, this mantra contains the entire teachings on abiding in Prajnaparamita, abiding in the fearless state. Trungpa Rinpoche's translation is, Om, gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, awake, so be it. This is a description of a process, a journey of always stepping out further and further. We could also say, Om, groundlessness, groundlessness, more groundlessness, even beyond groundlessness, fully awake, so be it. No matter where we are on the Bodhisattva path, whether we are just beginning or we've practiced for years, we're always stepping further into groundlessness. Enlightenment is not the end of anything. Enlightenment, being completely awake, is just the beginning of fully entering into what we know not what. When the great Bodhisattva finished teaching, the Buddha came out of his meditation and said, Good, good. You expressed it perfectly, Avalokiteshvara. And those in the audience who hadn't walked out or died from heart attacks rejoiced. They rejoiced at hearing this teaching on stepping beyond fear. Isn't this an extraordinary teaching on bodhicitta? I know we haven't touched on the actual text of mind training like the rays of the sun today, but I found Pema Chodron's explanation so wonderful and illuminating that I think it is worth sharing. Thank you for listening today. Now we must end, for time is up. Thanks for being with us today, and I hope you'll do so again next week. Please dedicate, as usual, to gaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Thank you and goodbye.
language on planetaudio.org.